จัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมจัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมจัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะบุดังธัมมังสังฆังนะมัสสามิ So tonight, on this Easter weekend, I suppose I'll start out with something Easter theme, I suppose. Not really Buddhist theme, but Easter theme. What's the Easter theme? What's the death of Jesus Christ and the resurrection, right? Which I don't know very much of. But I think taking the first bit anyway, the death, the thing that comes to mind was that Ajahn Chah's kind of famous phrase he used to ask all the monks and novices and anagarikas when they come to the monastery. People want to come to the monastery to get some clarity, to be happier, to be enlightened, right? To be a better person. But he would look at them straight in the eyes. He says, "Have you come here to die?" It's like, "No, I'm coming here to die. Come here to be enlightened." And we could say that to people over and over again. It's an interesting reflection. What does it mean when Ajahn Chah was talking about? Yeah. Because when we come to the monastery, there is a perspective of kind of wanting to be a better person, seeking happiness and clarity. But sometimes, underneath all that, there's this delusion of a self, of the self being a better person. And as long as we practice with the delusion of a self wanting, grasping, it's always missing the mark. So what it's saying, die to our ideas of what enlightenment is. Die to our old habits. Die to a sense of self we take to be. And the same when we meditate. Sometimes when mind goes quiet, it almost feels like you're dying. You're sitting here, your eyes closed, you're not seeing things, sitting still. And there's not a lot of sense impingement when we're meditating. And something in the self, as long as you have a sense of self, it starts to rebel. So it starts to move, gives you something to identify with, usually in the form of thought, thinking, wanting, craving, like to have something, memories of what you were, plans and fantasies of what you want to become, things you'd rather be doing. But all these things, and there's a thing behind all that. What is it that's doing the wanting, right? So the more of a sense of self you have, the more the mind will start to move. When you have a sense of self, whether it's an illusion or not, then there'll be an expression of the self in terms of views and opinions, in terms of liking and disliking, in terms of judging, judgment. And meditation is going against all that. It's just like Ajahn Chah's kind of the phrase he was saying. When you see meditation, whatever thoughts come up, not my business, and go back to it. But most of us, we like our thoughts. We like the views and opinions. We like our memories. We caress it. We cling it. We follow it. We embellish it. We write it down. Tell our friends the great insights we have. And obviously, from a certain perspective, there is some, usefulness in being able to reflect, to think. But really, once the mind becomes more still, once it becomes really, really quiet, you get a better sense of this dying business, that from stillness, from emptiness comes tremendous clarity. We're not what we think we are. We're so much more. We're not what we think we were. But as long as the stillness allow things to open up, we see that we can have the ability to change in different ways that we can't plan for. And that's kind of the reflect on kind of the beauty of the path. You see young men coming into the monastery, young middle age, old man and woman coming in with the issues and problems. And sometimes just a few days of quiet, a few days of peace. And you know, that darkness that they come, the cloud of the shadow, confusion, things start to clear up, brighten away, you know. And then there's a brightness of the mind, just a few days of peace. Sometimes you come, you know, and as a layperson looking to train with all sorts of confusions and views and opinions. And just after a few weeks, few months, those kind of, the hard edges start to fall away. And this kind of sense of, this concrete sense of self starts to soften up, starts to become more, not malleable, but like more squishy. It's not so firm. As you practice further and further, you'll see this, you know, you understand that, yeah, we're conditioned with personality, with ideas, but we don't hold on to it so hardly. We have views on how to do things, but we know that, you know, other people have different views, and that's also okay. Yeah. So it's just kind of, yeah, sometimes when you practice, you notice you have certain kind of attachment, views and opinions, confusions, and then you're allowed to, and you let those things go. And there's a sense of peace, sense of stillness, sense of well-being that increases. And you reflect on that, it gives a lot of happiness that, you know, the Dhamma is working, something that brings a stillness, brings us peace. But just today, I was thinking, you know, this sense of appreciation, mudita, of actually seeing the success of others, is also an amazing tool to implement. I was just walking around looking at the work of the monastery. And I was just, you know, had this, looked down this, you know, very well-raked path. And it just gave me so much joy. I just sat down with just all this kind of pity, sukha, this rapture just boiling up. Because you see the raking that was done a few weeks ago. And you see the difference it is now. It's just a few weeks. And it's like, wow, so much care and mindfulness comes into this job. It's amazing. And this is just one recent example, but, you know, see other example of how you see the people become more awake when they come to monastery, more clarity, more serene. And it's a really amazing feeling that, you know, being a part of the whole process, but, you know, seeing the Dhamma unfold, you know, in not just in myself, but just in others. And just the beauty of the whole thing. And you understand, it gives me so much faith in the Buddha's teaching. You know, truth has this amazing power. It doesn't need any advertising, you don't need packaging. It works on its own. Imagine Dhamma just works naturally. As long as people have faith, as long as people have, you know, kind of purity of intention, everything else just kind of naturally happens. And you see it over and over again. That's kind of one of the byproducts of being a senior monk that I hadn't realized when I first came here. We did a lot of work, you know, organizing things, managing things, which was fine, something that I anticipated and accepted when I came from Perth. But this ability to be able to witness the change in all those people that come, and the happiness, the peace, and the well-being that it brings to different people, whether they're staying for a few days or they're staying for a few months. Yeah, I found it's kind of an amazing privilege to be able to do that, just kind of walk this path to different people come and go and seeing the change over time. But it takes, you know, purity of intention, it takes this openness to allow things to happen. You come with very kind of fixed views, fixed ideas of what it is. Then there's only so much that the path can do. So it's kind of a two-way street. There's an openness that happens. And then the Dhamma works as magic on different people. And it's a very beautiful thing to see. And also, mudita is a great way of looking at celebrating the success, celebrating the goodness of others. It's a great antidote to the usual fault finding that we sometimes get caught up in, you know. Oh, these guys never turn off the light properly. They don't wash the dishes properly. It's greasy everywhere. They didn't mop the kitchen. Which, you know, it's easy to fall into if we're not careful. Because we live with each other, we see the little faults that each other have. And if you're not mindful of really kind of looking at the positive, looking at the whole picture, it's easy to fall back into that thing. And it's not a very skillful or helpful state of mind to be. And yeah, it's, and kind of this sense of appreciation of each other's strength. Obviously, we're not blind to each other's kind of weaknesses or annoyances or irritations. But, you know, sometimes just focusing on the positive brings, you know, the clarity, brings a sense of well-being, a sense of connection, a sense of appreciation for the purity of intention. Yes, we come with issues, things that we need to work out, things that we annoy each other with, but there's also lots of purity of intention, of, you know, wanting to work on things. Just the ability just to look inward, just the intention of, you know, kind of seeking clarity, seeking peace in the mind. It's something that's very rare in the world. Most people are striving to achieve, striving in a very worldly different direction. And for people to come in here and to go against the grain, yeah, something very rare, very precious. And also, you know, kind of, and the celebrating the success of others brings a sense of, you know, kind of gratitude, brings a sense of harmony to the group energy. And like I was saying, every few months I give a talk on gratitude and contentment. And that's, you know, it's the beginning of the path. You know, gratitude is a sense of, is an attitude of, you know, seeing the positive of the situation, being a positive of yourself, seeing the positive of others. And when you have gratitude, a sense of contentment arises naturally. Gratitude isn't, you know, kind of sense of just being happy, whatever's already here. Appreciating, you know, the goodness of the situation, of the present moment. Not looking for more. Sometimes in the worldly ways, we're always looking for perfection. Yes, it's really good. You know, sun is really, really nice. But, you know, it's kind of cold in the winter, John. Maybe we should put a heater in. There's always something we can add more to everything. Or you look at, you know, whatever. The kitchen's really great. But I think electricity, a microwave, it would make it things perfect. Can heat things up. Or whatever it is that we look at. But gratitude just settles things, brings things to peace. When you're happy, you're grateful for what you have, you're not looking to improve, you're not looking for anything outside the situation. You're not looking outside the present moment. You're just here, just happy. And yeah, like I said, in terms of a place to practice, like I said, I couldn't ask for a better place. Yeah, every morning I walk around, especially this morning, beautiful weather, beautiful. The trees just seem to glow and sway and saying hi to you everywhere. The birds just like singing, especially for you. And I was amazed, like, yeah, this is, yeah, and I say it, people get funny, tired of hearing me. But this is paradise. You can't ask for a better place to practice, really. This is paradise on earth. And I always, can I, sometimes I do, I'm like, someone's going to wake me up. Pinch me and says, oh, actually, you've been dreaming. You're not, there's no such thing as the paradise. This doesn't exist. But it's now, it's every day, it's a, you know, every day is very, 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 very beautiful. Every day is just amazing place. So, yeah, I don't know why it is. That I get this feeling of like being very blessed, being very supported, being very like nurtured in this place. And it's just, obviously, it's just a bush, really, in the forest somewhere, New South Wales. But I do get the feeling that the beings here, the animals, unseen beings, are going to come together and seem to be supporting us in our practice. Yeah, but especially this year, like things seem to be coming together. Much more peace, much more clarity for some reason. And maybe it had, I'm rambling a little bit, but sorry about this. Maybe it had something to do with the big's visit. Because when he visited here, he said, he did some chanting and said, I'm here to wake up the forest. So what does that mean? Yeah, to wake up the Dhamma, to wake up practitioners as well. And ever since that happened, there's something that seems to be coming together, very beautiful, something. Things just come alive. And the trees are looking more lively, more kind of just deep colors. And the flowers are out, and the birds seem to be more magical. But maybe I'm high from something. No, and then, yeah, and it's just kind of, and practice seems to be really easy. meditation, you know, just glides by. The hindrances seem to be, you know, not so overpowering. Hindrances doesn't seem to be an issue at the moment. And it's a beautiful kind of place to be. And that's the thing, what kind of, but mainly it's just a cultivation, gratitude, happy just to be here, happy just to be with the people. Yes, we're not perfect. We annoy each other from time to time. But that's just the nature of living in a group. But, you know, always look at the people, the purity of intention, you know, people coming to practice. And gratitude is just, you know, it's the beginning of the path, you know, being happy just to be here, allowing the mind to be opened up, happy to be in a good situation. And the gratitude and contentment is also, you know, that takes you to the next level. It's the middle of the path. So always, and the end of the path, you talk to, you know, senior monks, meditation masters, what they talk about, like, you know, when you become enlightened, what feel, you know, what goes to your mind, Ajahn? Now you finish your practice. Immense gratitude for all the people that supported me. Immense gratitude for the teachers I come across. Immense gratitude for the Buddha, for, you know, going through his austerities, teaching for 45 years. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's the same, like the refrain of the chanting. Dhamma is beautiful in the beginning, beautiful in the middle, and beautiful in the end. And it is. It's always increasing sense of peace and stillness, increasing sense of belonging, connection. And the path is always the path of increasing sense of gratitude and contentment. So it's not going anywhere, but it's you know, an attitude of just appreciating whatever's already here. And we're happy to be here. Things start to slow down, become more still. Minds become more brighter. There's an energy. Clarity happens. And like, you know, it could be hocus pocus, but yeah, in a sense, enlightenment is here and now. In the present moment, it's not somewhere else. Sometimes we reach, you know, I'm going to be enlightened next week. I'm going to be enlightened next year, next month. But really, it only happens in the present moment, in the here and now, that clarity happens, a sense of well-being. So, and that happens when we tend to slow down, become more still. That only happens through gratitude, I mean, content, whatever's happening. We all come here want to be enlightened. You know, when we read these books about enlightenment, what does that mean? Right. Different teachers, different things happen. There's a bright light in the mind or something, and you say all these clever things, I guess, when you become enlightened. Whatever it is that people think you do. But it reminds me of a story about enlightenment and what it is like to be the Buddha. And it's called the wishing game. Right, wishing game goes like this. Five kids in the playground, and they want to play the wishing game. So the first kid said, you know, I have a wish. What's that? I want an ice cream. It's a hot day, so he wants an ice cream. Okay, yeah, fair enough, ice cream. Second kid said, no, I beat that easy. What do you wish? So the one who has the best wish wins the game, obviously. So the second kid goes, oh, that's a simple one to win. I wish I have an ice cream factory. Why is that? Because I'm getting ice cream whenever I feel like it. I get ice cream every day, all day long, right? So that's, okay, you win. Third kid thinks about it, oh, how to beat this one. How to beat an ice cream factory, you're getting ice cream every single day, all day long. I know. Third wish, third kid raises his hand, he says, I wish for $1 billion. It's a lot of money for a little kid. What is he gonna do with $1 billion? Well, first thing I do, I'm gonna buy myself an ice cream factory. That way I have an ice cream whenever I want. Second, I'm gonna buy myself a toy factory. I'll give whatever toy I want, anytime I want. I don't have to wait till Christmas to get my toys. I get my toys right away. So $1 billion, buy whatever you want. You satisfy all your desires, pretty much, right? That's what people wish for. That's what people work so hard for, right? For money to buy things, to Tipo, Balaram needs to set up situations, go on holidays. You know, so he can buy himself a cruise, a whole cruise liner if he wants to go on a luxury cruise. Live on there and do whatever he wants. Right? The ability to shape your world, the ability to bring forth, materialize whatever you want with money. And that's obviously we think, oh yeah, you know, it's just so coarse and you know, that's not what I'm here. But I mean that has a sway on a lot of the world. 99% of the people with money brings, you know, a certain amount of control, satisfaction, sense of happiness. So then $1 billion, so the fourth kid go, oh, it's getting a bit tricky now. How to beat this wish? How to beat this one? Fourth kid, he says, I wish for 3 wishes. Right? So first wish, ice cream. Give him ice cream right away. Second wish, $1 billion, whatever I want. Third wish, I wish for 3 more wishes. Unlimited amount of wishes to satisfy whatever. You don't like somebody, I wish you to disappear. They're gone. Right? So that's how the world goes. The ability, whatever you want, you get. And that's why sometimes you think, you know, the modern world's great, you know, with internet, instant shopping, instant delivery, whatever you want, you get right away. And that must be eternal happiness. That must be heaven. Whatever you want, you get. Right? Sort of. So the fifth girl, she's a girl, she's very shy, she's very quiet, she stinks, how am I going to get this one? How to beat 3 wishes? It's a pretty tough one. She says quietly, oh, I know what. She's going to be the future Buddha, right? Future enlightened being. She says, I wish that I was so content, I don't even need 1 wish. So that is the future enlightened being. You're so happy, you don't even need a wish. And that's what you can feel. You didn't buy that one. You already have the 3 wishes. No, and that's what you see with the spiritual practice. It's not about having, not about controlling, about letting go, about being with things. You're so content. You can see the difference in the mind that wants things, the mind that wants to create, control, manage. And the mind is just, yeah, it's not perfect, far, far from perfect, but you know what? It's good enough. It's great. And when you have the mind that's content, good enough becomes great. Good enough becomes fabulous. Goodness becomes, you know, unimaginable. Happiness and well-being. But it comes from this, yeah, sense of contentment, sense of, it doesn't, you know, and then it's not about what you have. So it's about how you relate to it. So it's not, it's more of a change of perspective, how to look at the world. And we see that in around us so much, that you don't have to be rich to be generous, right? Generosity is a state of mind. When you give, you say, I have enough. You can have, you know, $13. You don't need it, you can give it away. All you have, you give it. So it's a sense of, yeah, I don't need it. You can, on opposite direction, you can have $13 million. And it's still not enough. It's always more to have, more to get. You know, these days, a house in Sydney is at least about $4 million. So I need $4 million at least. And then the stock market might tank anytime, so $13 million might become $6 million. And then with $2 million, you can't retire because now you live to 80, 90 years old, right? And then, you know, that $13 million is not going to go very far, so I need more money. I can't give anything away. I got to hoard everything together so I can live a comfortable life, so I can ensure everything, right? So it's not what you have that's so important, but how you relate to it. It's the same with this kind of mind that we have. Whatever mind states we have, sleepiness, irritation, anger, We just make peace, say that's good enough, instead of kind of punishing ourselves, criticizing, oh, I'm so full of anger, I want to be pure and beautiful and loving. Well, I am so angry and annoyed all the time. Not good. But with irritation, anger, sloth and torpor, restlessness, you say, oh, that's okay. This is what happens when you're not enlightened. You have these mental states that come up from time to time. That's okay. Just be with it. Just look at it. You're tired. Tiredness isn't a hindrance. If you think you should be energetic, then that's a problem. But tiredness is, yeah, this is tiredness feels like. This is what anger feels like at the moment. You don't identify with it. You don't think you should be anything else. These things come and go and they fade away. And you find that, yeah, just a sense of, you know, being with things. Not doing, not trying to push it away, but not trying to identify with it, not trying to hold on to it. Things just fade away on their own. They arise, they stay for a while, and they fade on their own. And you realize, yeah, you know, there's not much, too much to this path. So from perspective, there's a lot of energy to rouse, to meditate, to wake up early, to do things. But from another perspective, it's just this ability just to be with things, to appreciate whatever arising, to see as a challenge. If it's a hindrance that arises, just see it's a challenge. See it's a way, an opportunity to learn about yourself. Well, I thought I'm really loving. Wow, why am I feeling so irritated? Why do I have this maniacal thought about hurting my parents because they're going to be so annoying or whatever. But it's normal. Yeah, you think you think that you want to be this enlightened person. And then these thoughts comes up about your loved one. It can make you quite shameful. It can make you quite painful. But if you accept, yeah, there are different parts of you. Very beautiful parts and very, very kind of angry, violent parts. And that's fine. It's the ability just to accept the different aspects of ourselves. Be able to embrace. Because once you embrace, you know, inside, you can embrace the whole world. People outside, you know, they don't have to be nice and beautiful and calm for you to appreciate them. Accept people for the way they are. They can be talkative, annoying, irritating, and it's still okay. Everything is okay. I'm explaining my place. Everything has a place. And this is, again, a bright, spacious mind can accommodate, can accept everything that arises in the world. So then you're not so tired, you're not constantly have to manage to push things away and to pull things together. And just accept and flow along, whatever comes. But it's kind of, but it does, you know, there is this intention to practice. It starts with wanting to focus on wholesome qualities. This intention to work with the mind, to understand yourself. Because sometimes, you know, when I brings me to, sometimes when I go home to visit my family, that's always very interesting. Even though I go every year, it's more interesting when I was a young monk, because I didn't visit them very often. So it brings up a lot of different things. And it's what I call the performance, you know. In monastery, they'll say, how's your practice? How's your practice? What are you practicing? Why do we do? Why is the big performance coming? Some people say, well, performance when you die, see what happens to your practice or not. But performance is always when you visit home. With a family, you know, if they're not Buddhist, they will, just through being with them, they will bring different challenges, opportunities for you to reflect. And you see what it's like to be with people who are nice, good people, but who don't practice, who don't understand the training of the mind. And there's so much kind of unnecessary suffering around it. Like, you know, my mom, very, very brilliant woman, very sharp, raised a family, and does a lot of things by herself, very independent, super sharp mind. But as the aging process takes its toll, dementia sets in. But she will not accept that she does not have photographic memory anymore. She refuses to use Google Map. then we, it happens more often than not, we get to an intersection with the light changing. Mom, left or right? Yeah. It's like, okay, just calm down. And then, of course, dad gets aggro. Tell me to look at Google. Why did you not look at Google? So I'm trying to calm everyone. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, mom, just take it easy. Dad, I don't think yelling is going to help. Yeah, so it's always a constant of, you know, yeah, just get find it. And you see that, yeah, there's so much of it, it's just unnecessary. But it's just the nature of human predicament of, yes, you know, we don't train our mind. And when things start to fall apart, it can be a lot more, yeah, it doesn't, it can be a lot more kind of stressful than it has to be. And it takes just a little change of perspective, yeah, accepting, okay, yeah, you know, you're 80 years old, your memory's not going to be like when it's 40. But this distance, no, 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 I know. I know where I'm going. You don't need to look it up. Can we open map? No. Okay. But it allows just me just to flow along. Part of the practice is just flow along and see what happens. You know, yeah. I scream a match in the car, it's not going to kill anybody. Just a scream a match. And understand, yeah, these are just the conditions. You know, people come like this and they're not going to change overnight. But it does highlight the beauty of the practice, the beauty of just, you know, training the mind, the beauty of being able to kind of the good fortune of learning the Dhamma, you know, understanding, you know, the aging process, of understanding impermanence, of trying to get your head around, you know, not self, but not kind of identify that these positive qualities that we have, to understand that, yeah, okay, we all have strengths and weaknesses, but as we age, you know, these things change, and not to kind of to suffer unnecessarily over different things that come up. Yeah, and as you know, as I get older, as I am getting old, every trip in the States, it's a trip to the hospital. Not for myself, but chanting for relatives. You know, somebody's always dying up. So what happens when you get 50? Oh, your aunt and uncle, your extended family become a lot less. And which is fine. And it actually brings up the aging process more. Because when you're young, it's like, yeah, 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 whatever. Yeah, we die. Yeah, yeah, I die anyway. Yeah, and you can say so casually when you're 20 because everything's working well. Yeah, and I know I'm going to die. Yes, yes. It's one thing to say to know you're going to die, but you don't really know you're going to die. You just think you're going to die. It's just an idea. But when you see your loved ones, people you know grow old and, you know, start to fall apart in hospitals and just see them in sitting lying in bed and just shrunken. You know, when you're sick, you're like a shadow of yourself, especially cancer or something, you know. An auntie who was like, you know, full of life 20 years ago, just bones, bags of bones just lying there. Yeah, it brings deeper. Yeah, okay, this is the aging process right here. Yeah, it's not something you think about. So it does sink in. And it does sink in. Well, yeah, okay, yeah. This is life, looks like this. The people that you know, the people you spend time with, they start to drop off. Or you visit them, you chant for them. You go to their funerals, and you can, you know, remember the times that you spent with them. They're very lively, very healthy, and these things fade away. But it's, yeah, it's, so it's not kind of a thing that brings up fear or aversion, but it's, yeah, from a practice point of view, it's a great opportunity. Just allow, you know, the Dhamma of aging, of change, just sink in a bit deeper. Because it's true, when you're young, you know, you do understand, you know, you understand death on a certain level, but not as deep as if you've gone through the loss of a loved one or know somebody who actually died in front of you or something. Because I remember, you know, going to an autopsy and have a person, you know, cut up in front of me, you know, just, and yeah, something that Steve says, you know, he's just lying there. You know, you go to the morgue and all these dead bodies are lying there. You just think, you know, yeah, on one level you understand, okay, that these are dead bodies for different reasons, you know. But then on another level, it's like, they just look like they're just sleeping. Yeah, something the mind doesn't really want to accept death. Moving on. So it's something that you do, that's why we, as a Buddhist, we can, you know, reflect on the death and dying process over and over again. She said that it's just the mind which I can to accept. The mind just see it clearly. Over and over again. But the only thing that dies is just the body. is not the mind. Yeah, the mind goes on. So whatever goodness, whatever qualities that we put, that we develop, is something that we can take along with us, and wherever we go. And that's kind of the beauty of kind of developing the mind. So the body, yes, it does this thing. When you get 50, 60, it's not going to be so strong. Memories is not so reliable anymore. Your strength, energy is certainly not reliable. But the mind can be very clear, very bright, very happy, very content. And sure, it does then, you know, it has the strength, but it may not cure your physical symptoms, but it certainly allows you the space to accept, to embrace the aging process, to embrace life, as you know, as it changes. And that's something that's very, very valuable. That's something that's hard to come by. So that is the talk on, start out with, what's it called? The resurrection. But it's a different sense of dying. But I leave for you something to think. You know, you want to come here to be happy, to solve all your problems, to be peaceful. But have you come here to die first?
Okay. Sorry.
Okay.
Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava Buddham Bhagavantam Abhivade. Svakata Bhagavata Dhammo Dhamma Namasana. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sangham Namah.
So then, yeah, so that's also taking leave tonight. So we also now we officially say hi to Ajahn Nick. You can bow to him. Read up. Okay, so tomorrow is. Saturday. Yeah. Same. So the schedule is the 4 to 6, and 3 to 5, and 7 to 9. Yeah, for those who are here. Yes. We'll see you all back. Amen. Yes. Enjoy the Easter weekend. Enjoy the weekend. It will rain. Very beautiful weather for you guys this weekend. So hope you enjoy.
Hit record again. Hit record again. Is that?
Just hit stop. Yeah. The other button. The square button.
I'll turn it off.
The square button.